Coffee Club, Coffee Club. Grind your beans and grab your favorite mug. It's Ollie Morgan, George and Gus. It's them boys from Coffee Club. Boys from Coffee Club.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Coffee Club podcast for episode 137. George, Ollie, myself, Morgan are down here in the studio, and shortly we do have a very special guest joining us. He goes by the name of Hobbs Tesla in these parts.
In this realm, yeah.
He's, everyone listening knows who he is, and we are very excited to have this opportunity to chat to him because you never know what he's going to say.
I'm looking forward to it.
Hopefully it's unhinged.
He's a wild card.
Yeah.
And he's just crushing it at 21 years of age and just, yeah, extremely interesting story. So very excited to talk to him shortly. Before we get into that, I guess we'll just do a little check-in with us because, I mean, not that much has been going on since last week. But this week we do have a race for Ollie and myself. Taking the trip in the next couple of days to
back
LA.
To Australia. No, LA, yeah. Lost Angles.
Yeah. The closest to home that I've raced so far this season. I've traveled across the world and now I get to go to LA, yeah. which feels pretty good.
What's the flight for that? 2.5 hours?
Something
not
like
even,
that.
I don't think.
Dude, it's got to be like, pretty nice.
It feels really short. Like,
yeah, it's
takeoff
be
touchdown
nice.
Must be like 90 minutes.
Yeah. I think they write 2 hours and then it feels, you can barely watch a movie.
Yeah. Which is a shame because, you know. I want to take advantage of the movie selection.
Yeah, so we're very excited about the LA Grand Prix. I guess before we get into it, we will just give a little update on just our takes on Pac-12s because we actually got to witness what is apparently the last Pac-12s of all time. I don't know. Is that confirmed?
Well, next year it will just be a dual meet between Washington State and...
Oregon State, is it?
Oregon State? Is that the...
I think it might be them.
Yeah.
Definitely, I think it is those two.
Maybe, I don't know.
Like Penis Relays was founded by Ben Franklin, Pac-12s was founded by Pac-Man. Fun fact. So
I always wondered where it
got that name
from.
That's where Pac-12 came from. But that was our first and our last Pac-12 appearance.
Yeah.
So it was, what were you guys' thoughts of the racing?
I think it was kind of weird. It was... I mean, that was amazing racing. And especially,
was fun to watch.
Yeah, I think like we're really focused on the distance. I'm pretty sure on the sprints, like they have a lot of really good sprinters with like Oregon and USC and stuff. All those schools. The distance races, 5K, 10K, our boy Kai Robinson just kind of
jogged it.
Dominated
it like
them.
It. Yeah.
He looked very smooth, which is very impressive coming from sea level to race up at altitude. Yeah. I think for us probably, I mean for everyone, the 1500 must have been like the race of the meet considering that there were three different national champions, I believe,
all from,
in it.
All from the same school.
That's never happened before.
And not one of them won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they came 2, 3, 4,
It was a George Beamish kind of race. Like, George raves and commends these type of races when they happen.
I don't know. That was... I mean, I haven't been in a mid-350 race in a long time.
But you like the races
fun,
that,
though.
Like...
52, I think, was the last lap.
I'm not surprised that there was a lot of hesitancy from a bunch of sea level guys coming up. So I'm not surprised they ran a 71 in the middle.
That's
but closing in 52, no matter what, is impressive.
Mm-hmm. That's college 1500 meter racing. That's 1500 meter racing in general.
You would think that would like be perfect for the UW guys.
Yeah.
That's the kind of shit they do in practice like every week. Just ripping 400s and random fast stuff.
What's the name of the Oregon boy who won? Cook?
Elliot Cook.
Is it?
Yeah.
He's legit. He's
came
so legit.
Back
Captain
an
Cook's
hour later,
ancestor.
2 hours later, and won the 800?
He won the 800 as well. Did he?
Right?
Well, me and Mario went to get bagels. Well, what happened
I'm pretty
was,
sure he did.
There's a whole story.
So I know he won the 800 last year as well. I just know that because like when he won the 1500, they said...
Well, from what I heard from...
We'll just pretend like he won both because I'm pretty sure he did and just hype him up extra.
Well, what I heard from Jerry Schumacher...
I mean, I asked Jerry, but he didn't...
Yeah.
Unavailable.
There's no comments. So.
Well... when I spoke to Jerry, apparently Elliot Cook's on an 11 scholarships because of they really don't have anyone else. So they've put all their money into Elliot Cook, who's Captain Cook's ancestor. So it's good to see.
Well, it worked. It paid off for them.
Yeah, it did pay off. It was interesting race to watch. It was very, very devastating to see the Buffs, though. They had two guys in the final and they both fell with 200 to go, which was a bit of a shame.
Did they trip each other?
I can't remember, but it was very scruffy. Like, it was a very scruffy race.
I think one of them... Okay, I'm so confused on this because I remember seeing, like, those times, and then I've watched the race multiple times and I haven't seen the fall. And I'm pretty sure one of them finishes on his feet.
They both finish on their feet.
But, like, he doesn't fall.
No, they both fell. I was, like, I was at the 200-meter mark when that
What
happened.
Am I thinking of?
I'm not sure. But me and Mario could defend me here. We watched it and they both fell.
I don't know what I'm thinking of because I swear one of them, one CU kid, like the good one, didn't fall, but I really can't
this
remember.
This is such a good recap. We don't actually know what happened.
What you have to know is that Luke Hauser went to the front. He pushed in front of Captain Cook's son with 200 to go. And from there, and Captain Cook had been leading.
That's how he went indoors.
And Captain Cook was leading on to the last lap. So he looked in the prime spot. But then once you go back in a second, I think often it's hard to come back. But then he came back around him and outkicked him. And it was pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
And then
Insta Blaze is going to be good.
Yeah. And then the Nathan Green came through and Wask him doubling back from a steeplechase victory. Which is a bit of a wild card. Did it for the team who UW did end up winning the team title. So
got those 10 points.
Credit to them. Big shout out to them. But I mean, it was like fun to watch, but it wasn't like the most fun thing I've ever watched.
Well,
it's my overall takeaway.
Okay. My takeaway, and this is me just getting a bit antsy with it. I had to pay $25 for entry.
Oh, I forgot about that. Okay. And it wasn't fun at all to watch.
To be honest, like,
it wasn't fun.
If I was paying $25 and it was going to like the prize pool or to the athletes, I'd be happy to pay $25. But I know that $25 isn't going to the athletes. It's probably going to some...
Yeah, where do you think it went?
Probably to the Pac-12 retirement fund or to people that, like, you know, maybe they're in debt.
I think it went to Shadur. Straight into the Cybertruck fund.
The Cybertruck fund. So we're paying for that. So like $25, I don't know how much it would cost to go to a Big Ten championship because we never paid, but I wouldn't think it was $25. But $25 and I watched two races that I cared about because I had to leave to get bagels with Mario. So the 1500 and the 5K. And yeah, that's like, unless that money I could like give it to the athletes, then
it's not great ROI.
Yeah, it's kind of return on investment. It's pretty shit, but yeah. I don't know. It was funny though because people were, I saw on Twitter, Dan Lilo was complaining about it being in Boulder because there was no stands. They had to like set up all these stands and it's never been in Boulder and it's just a shit place to host it. But
yeah,
I feel like it's a pretty cool track. Like it's got the flat irons in the back, pretty cool vibes. But the funny thing with the track was that the stands are on the wrong side. Like you'd want the stands on the other side because the wind is usually prevailing from the other side. So you'd get like a tailwind.
No,
because they were finishing the 200s on the other side.
Yeah, no,
and you
no,
had
that
the
was
flat
just,
irons.
That was just because they changed the races because of the wind.
Well, what I'm saying is they put the stands in the wrong place.
Well, no, the stands were at the finish line.
No, but the finish line's at the wrong place.
Now I'm confused.
So where the stands are, they're not facing
not the
flat irons.
No, but surely they're on the finish
line. Oh, you're just saying that both the finish line and the stands should be on the other side so
yeah.
you can watch
the race,
the finish line
flat irons
and
in
also
the backyard,
see the flat
and
iron.
You have the wind. Like, they just put the stands in the wrong place.
Oh, okay.
In my opinion.
No, that's a fair argument.
Considering that they don't have stands, why would you not, you know?
Well, they put them at the finish line.
Maybe it's because most track meets are
well, the track is not, like, it's not correct, apparently. It's not, like...
Well, next to correct. It, they couldn't put stands on that side. Actually, no, they would have to move the whole track around because the pole vault is on the outside of the track on that side.
The track is just weird.
So they have to redesign
the whole place.
They have to pick it up, move it all around.
It's in a weird angle, but yeah. No, it was cool. First Pac-12s, it was fun.
Oh, yeah.
Fun vibes.
I looked up the 1500, by the way, we were both kind of right because the one guy that I was thinking of finished fifth or sixth. And then two guys fell. So there's three CU guys rather than two.
Oh, okay. Well,
so we'll
two guys that fell kind of CU, right. It sucked. But yeah.
Did Wisconsin win Big Tens?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Mick Byrne was on holiday.
I think I would have seen Mick Byrne say something about it if he did.
But
I saw Adam Spencer won the 800. Pretty cool. Yeah, and there's like good. There's pretty legit 800 meter guys in that conference. So, yeah.
NAU did not win the
Big
Sky.
That's tragic, isn't it? How did and it was one point
defeat
four
to
by
the
four.
To the might of the Big Sky Montana State Bobcats. Huge.
And Nico Young wasn't in the 4x4.
And Nico Young scored 26 points.
He scored 26.
No, wait, I think Nico Young was in the 4x4. Someone said he and Colin both ran.
How many events did he do?
That would mean he quadrupled. I don't know if I believe that. Someone said they saw Nico in the 4x4.
Isn't that a really good way to injure your best athletes, is putting them in the 4x4?
Or just to get them really fit.
Colin, I'm sure that Salami can definitely run like 47 seconds based on what I've seen. So he probably like
he deserves the best guy. He deserved to be on there.
I don't know what Nico could run. But yeah, I think we had to get like fourth or something in the 4x4. To clinch it, and they could not manage it.
Damn. That would shock. I mean, maybe Nico has gotten so good at sprinting that he has earned his place on the 4x4, because I wouldn't like normally look at him and be like, yeah, this guy's like going to be the, because you know how like even if you have a quick finish, it doesn't necessarily mean you're the quickest sprinter on the team. I would be thinking that surely there's just some other kids on the team who are like decent distance runners who can run like a really good 400. You wouldn't need your best guy to do it, but maybe he is just that good at everything now. He's training with Dr. Borsak. His form training has really got his sprinting wheels going.
Yeah.
Apparently Duncan Hamilton posted in a who on his story afterwards. Love that.
It's pretty good. Montana State. Is Mike Smith getting fired now because he lost conference?
It's getting a reduction.
He's in his contract.
Yeah, he's just going to focus on his collective athletes.
He should. He should. No, he's just going to focus on Nico Young. Take him all the way.
And, I do know what that feels like. One year, my last Big Sky, we lost to Southern Utah by 1.25 points, I think. It was devastating.
Wait.
How do you think NAU would do at Pac-12?
I don't know how we had... It was not whole points.
I've never heard of a point system that has quarter points.
I guess we'll never know.
We'll never know. Who's this?
Hey, knock, knock.
Who's there? That's not how you finish that joke.
Yeah, I was going to say, that joke just remained unfinished.
Hobbs, can you hear us?
Yeah, I got you guys.
Well, we got you as well. Hobbs, how you doing?
Doing good. Your studio looks bougie.
Yeah,
we're cashing out. Yeah,
would have loved to have you here in person,
dude. Yeah, at some point,
where are you calling from?
In Boulder.
Are you in Flag?
I'm in Flag right now. Yeah.
How things?
Yeah, they're good. Smooth. It's kind of getting smoky up here though, which is
frustrating. I haven't thought about the smoke in a while.
I wonder
where's fire.
Do you know where it's coming from?
Yeah, they're like burning, controlled burns.
Ah, fuck.
So like local,
but
local.
Yeah, it's not so bad. It's not like like 2 years ago when it like was just a giant smoke cloud. So we're managing. But
okay, good to know.
Yeah, that's right. Hobbs, are you racing in LA this week?
Yeah.
1500 or what?
In 8 this then pre classic the next weekend.
That makes sense.
That makes sense. Yeah.
We were going to, but we have not yet really previewed like the races this week. So you're in the 800. Are you in the top section?
I don't. Last I heard, no.
Okay,
so, dude, which I'm fine with.
They're so just like, it feels like they're so disorganized for the Lost Angles Grand Prix because no one knows what the fuck they're doing.
I don't know what hotel I'm in, and I'm going there tomorrow.
I'm pretty sure I'm 75% sure I'm in the main hotel, but then I got an email from Matt telling me a different hotel.
I think I'm in the A section, but I could potentially be in the B section. And the weird thing is that if you're in the A section, they pay for your hotel. If you're in the B section, they don't. So I could just be like, oh no, you're in the B section. You have to pay like $1,000. Here you go. And I'll be like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I might go camping.
Yeah. I have to camp it out.
Yeah.
I heard a rumor that the A section was paid for 1240.
What?
This morning.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Where'd you hear that from?
Just saw that at the track. I think it was Abdi Hamid. So,
I don't trust that guy.
Not surprising.
I don't trust that guy.
Knows?
Is he racing?
But I think he says he's in the B heat in the 1305 race. It's unclear.
So
the whole thing is unclear.
No one knows what the fuck's going on.
I love that you guys in Flagstaff are simultaneously having the exact same conversations that we're having in Boulder. Because that's like this morning. We're like, because Jonas and I are both doing the 5K, and then we're next to the 10-man boys who are also doing the 5K there, and we're all talking about it. And no one knows what the fuck is going on. No one knows like which who's in what heat, who exactly is doing it. Heat sheets were meant to come out today. We haven't seen them yet. Pacing assignments are, I've heard, I think initially I heard it was going to be like really quick, like what you're saying, but then I heard that they slowed it down to 12:55, which is still
is
quick.
Jingi and Hingi there?
So slow.
They're supposed to be in the A's.
No. I was talking to him last Saturday. He says he's opening it pre.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He's meant to be doing it one.
Because I think
that was just another rumor.
Because he's got to do pre and then Oslo. So he's probably just like, fuck, I won't do it.
This is the highest level meet in the US apart from the pre-classic. And
no one knows what the fuck's going on.
Absolutely. I think I wouldn't be surprised if Jingi wanted to do it back when no one was doing it. And now that there's... So what can happen for those at home is this year... So every Nike athlete has in their contract, like you have to run the pre-classic. And some years there's 5Ks and 10Ks there. But this year, I think the women's has a 5K, but the men's doesn't have a 5K or a 10K. So then at this LA meet, which is also run by the same meet organizer, Nike show, they have apparently called the 5K, like the pre-5K or something like that, and they've just said to all these like world-class athletes, like, you guys have to come race it. Mm. So it's going to be like really stacked with even like Africans coming over. I've heard like Aragawi and Cheptegei. We'll see who actually turns up on the start line. But yeah, at one point it was meant to be pretty chill. Like it was like more of like a sound running type vibe almost. And then...
Now it's not.
Yucca got added, and then that was still cool. Because you know how I think two years ago, it was still kind of like a chill vibe when he went and ran just like 13.0s and won. Mm. And yeah, then now everything's
ruined. George paced that, actually. Didn't we, George?
About that. You guys paced. We paced. And Mike Smith didn't say thank you.
And Mike Smith went and gave freaking George a nice big hug and kiss on the lips. And then looked at me.
Nothing for Olin.
He looked at me and he says, why are you not in Wisconsin gear? And I was like, what the fuck does that mean?
Yeah.
And then he thought I was Olin Hacker.
Classic.
So. Hobbs, you had a great race last year at that meet, though.
You did, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was a good meet, huh?
To the Africans in the race. I mean, they make it fast. Mm-hmm. Like no American guy wants to like take it from at a K at like 3:32 pace, so or 3:31 pace. So I actually like having the East Africans come over.
Did you beat Cooper in that?
Yeah,
you did, right?
Yeah,
he was right behind you.
That was a big moment. That was a big moment for me.
Yeah,
I'm still working on Cole. I can't get him. He's too good.
It's all right, man. Just keep at it. Look for your
George
opportunity
next week.
Ask George what to do. He's been pretty right. good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you get him at Milrose or did he nip you?
He got me at Milrose this time. I got him the first time.
And then you got him at Worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got him back at Worlds.
Yeah, you got him back at Worlds.
Oh, man. Wow. This conversation could go anywhere.
Yeah,
right
honestly,
now.
It could just go on any tangent. So,
Hobbs, how has your life changed, speaking of Worlds, since winning a Worlds medal?
Not at all.
That's the exact answer that I was looking for.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was pretty fun fun getting one, though. I mean, I was, like, really having a – but before that race, I was, like, already trying to deconstruct what I did wrong all season, like why I was going to have a bad race. So to walk away with a medal was pretty rewarding because I was literally warming up trying to figure out what went wrong. And then at some point in the call room, I'm like, all right, let's get time to get my shit together here and focus up. So
you were like, you would say going into that race, like you were not confident.
Yeah. I think I was just like mentally tired. Like, I raced every weekend for like four. That's my.
That's true. You race a lot, yeah.
But I feel like that mental, like the bandwidth is like a muscle that needs to be worked out too, you know? Because it's like older. I feel like older athletes are able to race more frequently and kind of keep a level head, just due to experience. But you kind of gotta like work out, like race when you don't feel like it sometimes, just to like get the habit in. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys agree, but I think that's something. That's like evolved as I gotten older. It's been easier to race more.
I think that what has happened, Hobbs, is that you've tapped into a energy source that I love to use as well after a bad season. It's called the self-hatred method, where you just like, fuck this shit, and you went and just rolled it. That's what I loved about it. I think that was a kind of a factor too, because sometimes, yeah, I think when you go through a season and you're like, what the hell, why did I make this mistake or why did this happen? And then all of a sudden, bang, you just go run, you know, and then you crush it. So I think that's what's happened.
Yeah.
Highlight moment of USA's was not Cole winning. It was you crossing the line and be like, fuck.
Yeah, I love that.
That was so funny.
My grandma wasn't happy about that. I saw Cole celebrating and like threw a little like temper tantrum and like jogged in. And then I like look over and Henry Wynn was ahead of me. And I was like, oh, like, what have I done? you fucking idiot. So I just thought I'd blown it by like being a little immature there and like throwing a temper. So I doubled down and threw more of one.
Yeah, and you got a medal.
You got a world medal. So.
It worked out. I got lucky on that. Yeah.
You ran it like an experienced campaigner though, from the front. That was impressive.
Yeah, seasoned vet looked like.
Leading, almost, I guess that Kenyan guy was kind of, you guys were switching off a little bit. He kind of like made it seem like he wanted to take the lead.
He was having a hard time making up his
mind. Yeah, he couldn't decide if he wanted to take the lead or not, but you were leading at the bell. What do you think was going to happen leading at the bell?
Well, I was just like, I felt really flat by the bell. So I was like, at any point, like the whole field's going to go around me. But luckily I had like, since it's an indoor track, like it's actually quite hard to get around the person in pole, unless you're George, I guess. But I was like, all right, they haven't caught me yet with like 40 to go. I was like, I'm going to win. and then that didn't last long. But I thought for sure there was going to be a fall in the race. We had four heats of seven people and like,
and someone fell in like every single heat
in every heat. Yeah. So I was like, I don't want to go down. Also like, there was a guy in my heat that like got his Achilles like cut in half.
Yeah.
So I was like,
yeah, that was in your heat. Remember?
It was gnarly. Yeah.
We went there together. That was not good.
That was crazy. Actually, I remember that.
We had like six people in our heat and that happened.
Yeah. So I was like, dude, like, someone's probably gonna die in this. I just don't want it to be me.
Somebody's not walking off the track.
So that's why you went to the front. You just wanted to stay clear of all that trouble.
You wanted to survive.
Yeah.
I think people freak out more in the heats though. Yeah. Like the final actually seemed like that. Like once it got going, I was like, actually, this seems like less chance of something going that badly compared to the heats. I feel like everyone's like so antsy.
Everyone on the start line in the heats like is kind of expecting to make it to the final. So they're like, they're a little more anxious about like their place, and like going into the final, they're like, well, we're just going to go race. Mm-hmm. And there's like less expectation almost for a lot of people. Like how many people are like on the line thinking they're going to medal or like want to be in position for top three? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think heats can just be more tactical. Like more, yeah, definitely more weird shit can happen. Just more wild cards in there as well.
So. That Achilles, that's a nightmare situation.
Yeah. It's pretty horrible.
Oh my goodness.
Well, at least you came out unscathed and with a medal around your neck. And then I guess you got to go settle down back to some training for a little bit, recover from an indoor season. But then you did take a trip over to Germany just a few weeks ago, which I was in China, I believe, when that went down. Was that like covered a lot in America? Because I didn't hear anything about that. And then I just opened my YouTube and I saw this meet happening.
It didn't get a lot. It was like a couple of days before people were like, all right, going to Germany.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Give us the rundown on that, Hobbs.
It was pretty fun. I think like the highlight of the meet was like Marco Arop running 144 on that course.
Dude, that was insane.
Which is like, I don't even know what that'd be worth on the track, but it's incredible. Because it had like, I don't know, 490 degree turns and an uphill. Cool. So I was like, they're going to run 148. And so that like blew my mind. My race was pretty good. I just like, the rabbit went out in 51 on the roads. So it was so, it like the race played out kind of weird because of it. But I like made a move with like 200 to go because it was like pretty zigzaggy. I was like, no one can get around me. And then with like 100 to go, this 800 guy made it look like I was standing still. I felt like so untalented because he put like 3 seconds on me in the last 100. Like, yeah, it was brutal. But it was pretty funny. It was cool seeing Adidas headquarters. Like they got a lot of cool stuff there. I was a little annoyed I wasn't on any billboards next to Messi or anything.
should talk to them about that. Sort it out.
Yeah. Like, you know, why am I not being used more? You know, I could.
Yeah, exactly. Use me.
Get a huge billboard. Marketing campaigns.
Hey, the funniest thing though would be if you did turn up to the headquarters and there's just a massive Hobbs Kessler poster just right in the middle of the building. You're like, what the fuck?
That's
me, baby.
That's what I expected.
That's me. My face over Messi's. You know that.
That would be pinnacle. That'd be amazing.
I mean, you were a world record holder until you had to come home, and then you weren't anymore.
I thought I was going to be one again and make a bunch of money. I was like, I'm going to double dip. This is sweet. And then the guy just like launched.
Was there prize money there, or was it just like contract money?
A little bit, but it was like they were showing out big bonuses for the world record.
Classic marketing.
Makes sense.
It's a good, like, it's a really good idea.
It's pretty doable. So
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the course they had, like, I think, I forget what the guy who beat me, his name was, but his like 354 is probably worth 333, I think. That's my guesstimation. So I think it can, I mean, if you get a good road mile course, no reason you can't go really fast, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I liked how they had the race set up where everyone was wearing the same jersey and same uniform and same shoes. It actually looked sick. Did you see those? I actually thought that was like quite a cool branding exercise.
Asics has done that in the past too, right? With some of the road races, they'd have those exhibitions.
They have had a brand one too.
It was kind of just like a...
But then that's not your race kit, right? For the year. Is that a one-off?
No, it's just a one-off. And like,
I actually preferred that one to your season one.
I like the purple one, but no, they were like, if you do not wear this kit, you will receive zero bonuses. Like, because apparently they've had issues with it in the past, so they really were trying to drive that home.
I guess we did.
I'm not into the highlighter color. That's not my vibe.
That's a Brooks Beast thing. That's
a lot of brands end up highlighter colors for some reason.
They can have it.
Yeah. They can have it,
that's
Hobbs.
A good quote.
Yeah,
but yeah, I guess we didn't even explain for those who actually have no idea what we're talking about. This was an event in Germany that Adidas put on, where they did all the different distances, road races on a world record eligible course, and just tried to break as many world records as possible. So it was kind of like a more low key. I mean, it's really high key in some ways, but it was like a breaking two, but like more. I mean, is that more low key or more? Definitely less planning.
Yeah, I'd say less planning.
Like kind of less going into it, but yeah, very very cool event.
They definitely could have done more to make the like Kjelta running 13 flat is amazing. Like, I think it was like a 1300 meter loop, and there were like seven turns, tight turns in it. So
yes, they weren't optimizing really. It was just they wanted near the headquarters.
It was just on the campus. It was pretty cool, but again, like I think if you're really trying to like sync some road records, you got to have a really like specific course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how that dude hasn't won every major championship for the
last five years. And then he gets to the majors and he's never like, he's like there, but he's never like crushing everyone.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's amazing. So Hobbs, going back to Flagstaff, which is where you're at right now. Well, we've really enjoyed following along we love the way that you operate, and especially during indoors, it was really cool seeing like the way that you do your training. You go up to Flagstaff when you see fit, you split your time between there and Ann Arbor, part of a very nice track club. I don't even know if we might have failed to mention that. But one thing that was really cool was kind of the some of the differences that you took this year in terms of your training, which seemed like they were really personal decisions. I know you have a really good team around you helping out with that. I'm sure you get asked these questions a lot, but are you still, is the Hobbs system, the Hobbs Tesla system still in play? Are we still not running longer than, what was it?
Was it 7 miles?
I think it was 7 miles.
Yeah. In that neighborhood. Yeah. It's still in use. It has not been adopted by any of my training partners, unfortunately. they're lost.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think like some of, I don't know, like my training is pretty standard, but I have like developed a few quirks that maybe they're purely mental. Maybe they actually help. Who knows? But I feel like that's kind of helped me break through, or helped me break through this this winter. But again, I think they might be pure. They might work purely out of preference, and there's like nothing else to support it.
That's a lot of stuff.
It's Hobbs math. We've had Luis.
Hobbs math. We've
had Luis math, which Hobbs knows about. He's had the chat from Luis where you don't lift, you just run 10-15% more. And Hobbs math, yep. Hobbs math is what is it? Doubling 6 days a week and not running very far.
Yeah, well, it definitely disagrees with Luis math, but they both seem to work.
Maybe you could just. I mean, I'm not asking you to give away all your big secrets, but maybe you could just break down like a week for us, just so we can actually understand a little better what you are doing out there.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I'll start on Monday. You guys ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
I'm so ready.
I got my pen down. I got to take notes.
All right, I'm glad. Yeah, no, it's pretty standard. It's maybe similar to what you could consider like what a lot of the Europeans are doing now, just with a few modifications. But anyways, it normally starts out with I do like 6 or 7 easy on a Monday morning, and then Monday night I warm up a few miles, and then I normally do a speed development session. So that normally entails some like faster strides, but we keep them pretty short. So 40 and 80 meter strides. And when I'm going really fast, only 40. But every couple of weeks I'll be running pretty close to 4 flat for 40 meters on the fly. And that's been like a huge help with my mechanics, and that's probably one of the more unique things we do is like the really short strides. So I'll do that, some drills, not too many, and then cool down another 3-4 miles, get 13 or 14 on the day. Tuesday is a bigger threshold day. Normally double threshold, which I'm super embarrassed to partake in because I feel like a bandwagon guy, but it's proven to work pretty well for me. So I guess I'm stuck with it. For the time being, but pretty standard. I normally break it into a longer interval session and a shorter interval session, 50 minutes to an hour, depending on the day. And then, yeah. And then Wednesday, just 6 and 6 or 6 and 7, and then a lift. Thursdays will be, I'll shake out in the morning and do some more strides. And then that night, normally do a harder hill workout, with like some longer VO2 intervals to start, and then some shorter intervals as I near the end. So like the typical like session is I do 4x600 pretty hard, and then up the hill, and then, 3 sets of 300, 200, 100. And you're going pretty hard, like seeing white by the end. But I've really noticed the benefit on the hills, like, they just don't beat me up as much, so I can really, really go hard with and still be recovered by Saturday. So yeah, Friday's recovery, 6 and 6 or 6 and 7, and then I do normally during base another big threshold day, whether that be a single or a double, on Saturday, and then take Sunday off except for a lift. Another thing is I run pretty slow on my easy days. I'm normally in the 7:30s, but some runs being over 8 minutes is common, which I know you saw Flanagan doing a similar thing. But that's just like with so much quality in the week, I just have to like run slow enough to recover and get the basic volume in. But yeah, pretty similar to the European approach, but with a few modifications and things we found.
That's
helpful.
So cool. That's so different to us. That's so different. It is very different. Ways.
Jordy, are you're salivating right now?
The last time I ran a 7:30 mile average.
Wow. I love that training. can I ask about two things? Firstly, your Thursday hills. I love that, especially because that's how I was in college, and I'm always asking Dathan to do more hills now. But Dathan does prefer us getting on the track and running those quicker reps. Do you transition that workout to like proper track kind of like 1500 meter specific workouts, or do you feel comfortable just doing hills for that type of work all year round?
Yeah, I mean, I try to keep the hills as long as possible. just because like I feel like there's huge mechanics benefits running the hills. Like they force you to run really, really clean, and you're like, it's a higher VO2 cost just because you're never like really in the air. You're always having to push. And there's like no eccentric downloading. So like it just beats my legs up way less. But I do transition because the opportunity cost of the hills is like, it's obviously less specific to running on the track. So I've started transitioning more to track work, and I'll sometimes do workouts where I kind of split them. So do a few different hill intervals and go to the track or vice versa. But yeah, definitely transition more into the track to get kind of more specific work in, during racing season. But I mean, most of the year is spent kind of in that pattern. So, I found like, I actually don't need too much specific 1500 work to get in good shape. Indoors, I only did two or three really hard specific sessions. I just feel like the base work with the hills and the strides, like that gets me most of the way there. And, the more specific work kind of tops it off, but like, I'm limited in how much fitness it actually creates. It's just like the last like 5-10%, you know?
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And then the other one that's interesting, which is pretty different as well, is your speed development day. I mean, some people on our team do it, and I think it's pretty cool, but does that ever just like destroy your body running that quick on like a Monday before you go into your threshold day? I guess it doesn't really matter, but.
Yeah. If you're really going like close to max effort on a 40, it will come at a cost. The nice thing is like I by doing shorter intervals, so 40s and 80s, even if you're not like going really hard, I found it allows me to get like more of that turnover work at a lower cost. Cause I found like doing a hard 100 meters is like, if you're doing 100 meters in 11 flat, like that would beat you up pretty bad. So like every week I'm running sub 11 second pace for 100, but since it's such a short interval, I think it's like, it's been a way for me to maximize, like hitting that zone with not really having too high of a cost. Although there is one, especially if you run fast, but if you have a threshold day the next day, like as long as you understand, you might feel a little funky, like you'll recover, by the end of the week, you know.
Damn, you're fast. That's very quick. I mean, if I just bang
that is quick.
Sub-11 pace. What do you do on your Sundays normally? I mean, you said you lift, but apart from lifting, how do you like to spend a day off?
You going climbing?
I went the other day. It was pretty fun. No, I normally just like hang out and talk shit.
Nice. Love it.
Get
love it.
How many?
Bored. Generally bored.
How many of those days is Bryce doing with you?
In the winter, he did a lot more. Because he was just, even though he was indoor world champ, he like completely trained through. He was doing a bunch of it in the fall and winter. Now that like it's getting a little more real and he's like trying to get into 142 shape, he's doing stuff that's a little more specific to him.
Fair enough.
Normally most days we warm up and cool down together. So I really think like showing up to the track with someone is the most important thing. Like you can get your workout done alone, but like having to show up, time every rep yourself, like that's really lonely, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about a flying 40, you and Bryce, who is?
Dude, I get cooked.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's on those 40s and when we're running the shorter hills,
like
Bryce
the 3-2-1s.
Really reminds me. Especially like on the 100. Like I can get him on the threes, and
yeah,
if I push hard enough, I can nerf him a little bit. It'll be a little tuckered out, but no, it really reminds me I'm not an 800 runner. Like. I'll be like turning over as fast as I can, and he just kind of like just can put so much more power into the ground.
Yeah, dude, that
he's so powerful.
His like, stride is insane. Even I remember just our pre-meet we did together in Glasgow, and we were running probably like we ran a couple of 26s, like 13, 12 second hundreds, and Bryce would start behind us, and just come by in lane two, and he's taking half the number of strides as us, and he's just like blowing by. It's like, boom. What's going on?
It's
here?
Like, yeah, no matter what I do, I cannot do this. Like, so it shows me. I mean, he's run 143 low, so it shows me what someone at that level, especially coming from more of a speed side, like how insane they are.
Yeah,
it's messed up.
Yeah. Speaking of being in Flagstaff, do you enjoy spending a lot of time there, bouncing around with the different groups and stuff? And like you talked about speaking to Jakob, et cetera. Is there any like, I imagine there's a lot going on now that there's so many pro runners there. There's a good kind of just scene to be a part of and just some nice rumors and stuff. I don't know.
Nice rumors.
Yeah. No, I mean, there are like, last night and this morning, there are probably 100 people at the track, which feels overwhelming. Like it's actually like, I find it a little stressful, but.
Yeah, I've heard Mondays is crazy. Isn't Mondays the day that Jakob does his bleachers
his out stadiums?
There? Have you seen that?
Oh, no. They go at like 9 p.m. to like hide from people. So
I have heard they wait. They wait until everyone leaves before he does his stadiums. Yeah.
Secret.
I was going to say, like, stage, if you go to the track with 100 people, Hobbs, surely there's people coming up trying to get photos of you and shit. Does that happen a lot?
I'm not that special.
You're pretty special, buddy. You're pretty special. I imagine there'd be a bit of harassment.
I mean, the talent at the track even today, like, it's pretty incredible. I don't know. I don't know if it was like this when you were on the team at NEU, George, but, like, it is crazy. I asked Smith this morning, I'm like, do you ever like, you ever get like overwhelmed and just like think about just like booting everyone from the track, you know, everybody out.
Yeah.
But
I do remember
every
spring was crazy and every Olympic spring is even, you just like double, triple it. Yeah. It's like nuts. April, May every year was wild.
And the Europeans are still in town. I think they'll be leaving. Well, I guess there's half of them have left, but that's crazy. I kind of get it. Like, I have a weird sense of entitlement over Flagstaff, even though like, I didn't grow up here. I'm like, why are all these people in my spot? even though like
locals,
I decided to go like, to the most popular spot on the most popular day.
It's because you went to NAU for one semester. Your one semester in NAU gives you that entitlement. I think that's earned.
All right. Luis won't give me an NAU alum status. I keep begging him for it, but
what's his?
I don't know why I decided he's the gatekeeper of it. But,
yeah, what's his theory? What did you need to do?
I was a team manager for a semester, so tech officially part of the program. He doesn't give it to me.
Did you live in the dorms for a semester?
Yeah, in Gavaldon.
Even though, and did you just go to every practice and everything? Like, were you like on the team?
No, Smith.
You like, just lived in the dorms.
That was like kind of like the deal. Like Smith was like, I think you should go pro, but like I'll do my best to integrate you. So basically, I like trained, but I ran with them because they don't really. They don't meet to run. They just do it on their own and then did long runs with them. Just like for the NCAA, like purposes, like I couldn't work out with them.
What about those rules
in my role as a team manager. So that was a bummer, especially because like, Ronnie was like, just do whatever they do. So I, but it was good. Like, I don't want to go back to the dorms though. I'm glad I did, but like, running as fast as people have out of those dorms is incredible. Like Colin and Nico and I'm sure there's others, but it's like eating the, I don't know how they do it, eating the dining hall food and sleeping in there. Brutal.
Yeah. Freshman year back in the dorms. That's a challenging time for many. Including those that are trying to run at a world-class level. George did mention briefly you mentioned climbing, which is something we definitely wanted to talk about today because it gets, I mean, you were, I think you burst on the scene as, were you 16 or 17 when you really blew up? 17 blew up when you ran crazy, crazy high school times. And simultaneously, you were this amazing climber. And I think it's hard. I mean, like, people can see online that you were able to climb, what was it, at 17, like a 5:14 or something?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, people probably don't understand what that means. Can you tell us, like, how hard that is? Like, how many people are climbing that in the world?
I mean, quite a few, but I still think, like, you pull up to most climbing, like, with that ability, most climbing gyms, you'll be able to do most of the, or pretty much every climb set, so.
Give us a mile time equivalent to 5:14.
I think it might be over 4 minutes, unfortunately.
How many high schoolers are climbing at that level?
A lot. Oh, more, really? More than breaking four. Maybe I'll go like 4:04, but it's a little different. Cause like, it's so technical that like, you don't need to be as physically mature to do so. So it's more common for people to be really good young, similar to gymnastics, but not quite as strong. But I don't know. I was pretty good at climbing. I think I was pretty good at it, but I was definitely like not the best.
You can say you're pretty good at it. I mean, could you have pursued it like as a career or not really on the table?
No. I think now though I could be just like with now that I'm older and especially with like I think a lot of the training knowledge running's taught me, I think I could be at a way higher level than I was if I were to really dedicate myself. But we'll have to wait till I'm done running to test my theory. but no, it was never like never near the level I was at running. But I'm still like pretty proud of my like I still brag about it all the time, especially to my climbing buddies.
As you should, man.
As someone who is like turned up, it's such a different vibe. As someone who is like Ollie and I both were beginner climbers for a period of time, and you know, kind of like entered the scene where you like go to the local bouldering gym, and especially in Boulder, it's really fucking hectic.
Yeah, it's
hectic.
Nuts in Boulder.
It's very hectic. Yeah. So the scene is so different. Where I think, if you're just running out on a track and like, I mean, say we're running on a trail and we pass like just like a more casual runner, it's like not that big of a deal. But when you're inside a climbing gym, there's so much like, how would you describe it? It's like everyone's watching each other. Everyone's looking at each other. Everyone's like waiting to have a turn. If you're like, if you're an amazing climber and you're in a climbing gym, like you're the fucking shit. Like you look so cool.
I wouldn't say it's judgmental.
Yeah. I think about that level climbing where I could impress you.
Yeah. Like I'd see you climbing, like that guy fucking rocks.
Yeah,
man.
That guy's fucking good, man.
It's like a really cool social activity. Because like no matter how good you are, you're confined to a space, whether it's inside or outside, so you're kind of forced to talk and hang out with people, especially if you're working on the same climb as them. There's like it's like a puzzle, so you got to figure out the best way to climb it. Especially if it's at your limit or close to it, you got to be really really efficient in your approach and like find the best way to do it. So figuring out like the best methods with people is like one of the most fun things. Cause you have a shared purpose. Like you work together to unlock this piece of rock. It's like so, so fun. Like just figuring out little things like where to twist your knee in or where to put your index finger and stuff like that. When you get to a high level, it's like those details really matter. And it's really fun to go through that with somebody. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it is a lot more social in many ways. Do you see yourself like post running being living more of a climbing style lifestyle? Like will you like go on like climbing trips and stuff, or will you still like be more committed to running, would you say?
I think like I get pretty wound up if I don't run. So I think I'll have to I have to hit a basic quota of mileage or else I like lose my mind. But no, I definitely like, I'll have enough running by then. And I'm one of those people that like, I'm super obsessed with like physical challenges and progress and training. Ever since I was like 10 or 11, like that's like, I don't know. That's just how I'm wired. It's like, I just want to be training for something at all times. And I assume by my early 30s, my best running days will be over. So doing something that I can improve at will be really rewarding. But yeah, lots of climbing. I can't wait. I mean, I want to enjoy this running, but I don't know, so much to look forward to. So much to look forward to.
Got a whole life ahead of you.
Love the mindset for that. It sounds like it'd be a good dating thing to do. Take a girl there, you know? You gotta figure out a problem solve together, get a climb together. Yeah, no, you'd also impress them too, you know? You could be like, yeah, you know, this is cash. This freaking climbing.
It's a bit of a problem in climbing gyms is dudes going up to women and like trying to tell them how to do a boulder.
Yeah, that's actually probably true. It's like going to the gym and like, imagine like this guy at the gym harassed. And tell girls like, oh, this is how you should squat properly. And she's probably like,
yeah, no, I mean, it happens all the time.
Yeah, I can imagine that happens. I'm thinking about it.
And it's like climbing is one of those things where it's like men are a little better, but like women also like have advantages that men don't have in it. So like it's pretty close between men and women.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say like the very best professional women are near the mid tier professional men. Like, and so yeah, it's pretty close, but
yeah.
Definitely it's like probably the same as running where it's like, as soon as a new person walks into the gym though, everyone's eyeing them.
Yep, that's how it goes sometimes. So we do also have some kind of fun questions coming in from the Discord. One of them is about the whole, I don't know how much attention you pay to social media, but every week there's something happening with Jakob or Josh Kerr. And on our team, it obviously gets talked about a bit because we have also some world-class 1500-meter runners. Would you like to be a part of those rivalries, those conversations? Would you like to sometimes like kind of just put some like good quotes out there and just like try and take people down?
All right. I was actually thinking about this in the shower earlier. So it's funny you bring it up, but I don't know. My opinion on it is like one of the things – ever since high school. And I think this is down to running at its core, or at least, yeah, like high school cross country, and it floats all the way up to professional. But I feel like it's just one of the great things about it is like how, what a great community and how like supportive and loving everyone is. And it's like welcoming and like everyone's happy to see each other do well and stuff. Like, obviously you want to be the best, but, like, everyone's happy to see their friends and peers do well. So I think that's something really special and unique to running. So I don't really like it, like all the trash talk and all the shit talk, because I just feel like it kind of undermines the supportive nature of the sport. You know what I mean? Like maybe it sells a few tickets, but I think like the representation of track and field and cross country should be like a super loving, supportive like community. As well as competitive, but I don't think competitive means like shit talking and
like being assholes
to each other. Yeah, so yeah. Like I think you could be competitive and super happy to see. Yeah.
You could be a bit
cheeky. Your peers do well, so
you could probably like blend the lines a little bit and be a bit cheeky, bit of banter, like a bit of back and forth. Whereas
but all in good fun.
All like, in good like, fun, yeah. So like if you don't want it to cross the line where it's like, wow, they're just being dickheads to each other, you kind of want to have a bit of banter, but also have love and appreciation and respect for how talented and how amazing people are. Because that, you're right. Actually, you've kind of made me kind of think about that too. And
it's a really good perspective.
It's a good perspective on it, because a lot of the runners that you see, particularly in 1500, for example, the 800, like they're all just super nice guys, and they always credit like their competitors. And I think that's something that's pretty cool. Is the community there for sure. So I like that. Okay. I like that opinion. Yeah. I do like that. I do like a bit of cheeky, a little bit of banter.
Banter is different.
Yeah,
it's not
it is
like
different.
It gets a little cheeky.
But there is a line that can be crossed, and you're just like, now it's just like, you're just kind of, you're not being like true to what the environment is, you know? I agree with you, Hobbs. Like, that's awesome.
George and I, like, everyone warmed up and cooled down together.
Yeah.
And in Worlds, at least for the prelims. And like, I think, yeah, I don't know. I just like, Other sports can have the trash talk. I want to be like I want track to be the like happy to see
the
friends do well, because Yeah. I mean, even going back to high school, you end up being friends with most of your competitors. Mm. And then at a professional level, like, you see the same people every weekend. So it's a lot more fun to be buddies with them than like be like giving each other the side eye the whole time. And,
that's a good point.
I don't think it affects your performance. I think you're going to run just as hard.
Yeah.
And you want to beat them just as bad. But it just makes the whole experience way more fulfilling to have that community and easier, you know.
I think you just solved that whole beef. I think that beef's gone now. Like, we post this
Josh
out.
Curran, oh, yeah, pretty bad.
We
right
post
now
this out and Hobbs has just taken over and they've just like completely just
that's
wiped
like
him.
Galaxy Brain, he's just superseded
he
both
superseded
of their,
them.
Their childish beef.
I'll take it.
That's the way to win that.
Hell yeah.
That debate.
Hell yeah.
The next step is to beat them next week.
beat them at pre and then you can have the last laugh. About
you guys see the feel for that?
Yeah.
Isn't that absurd?
It's pretty insane.
Lots
pretty
of quick
insane.
Runners.
I think you could come dead last in the race and still run like 345, 346. So it's a pretty insane race. I wouldn't be surprised.
I was like looking like almost everyone there has a medal indoors or outdoors.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was how crazy. So I'm really curious to see how it's going to play out. I was like, when I saw Jakob at the track the other day and I was asking, I'm like, are you going to ask for a pace? And he said no.
Okay, I love to hear that.
Really?
That's what we wanted.
No pacemaker.
That's what we wanted.
But Jakob. That's
crazy. Or like nothing. He's not asking for like 218 or anything crazy through the case. So,
big man.
Wow. Yeah, like I'm curious. Like, maybe you guys can offer some advice, but I don't know if I've ever been a part of a race where it's that crowded going that fast.
Yeah. I mean, okay, like, so I'll give you a little tip. It's the same.
All right.
It's the same.
Really?
If you treat it the same way. Yeah, because like I think once you get to like Oslo for me, like Oslo last year was crazy with the amount of stacked people. Like Josh Kerr was 10th, ran 330, won Worlds.
Yeah.
Like it was an insane race. But I was dealing with my OP area, but at the time, like, and I know Jared and Mario kind of, we all kind of feel the same way. It's just like you can't change or make it bigger than what it actually is. It's just the race and these are the competitors that you're just going to be running against. So you just kind of create that idea of like, the race isn't going to get away from you. You've done the training. You're in that position. You deserve to be there. Just run the race the way you would run it. Stay relaxed. Don't panic. And you'll be surprised in what you can do. And like, just back yourself, man. Because I feel like when you get to and you see that field and you'll be in the quorum, you see all these guys like, shit, that guy was like, you know, 2019 world champ. That guy's won the Olympics.
Yeah.
So it can get like that. But if you kind of rationalize it to the fact of like, this is just a race. It's a mile race. These guys are all good.
Yeah.
But I can race with these guys, you know, and just treat it kind of not create it. Don't be too underwhelming with it, but don't let it get away from you. That's what I do. And it usually works. But yeah, it'll be a fucking awesome race, man. It's going to be pretty sick.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I feel like it, like, this could be a giant, kind of like an Oslo, like a giant blob of people.
Yeah,
coming
much.
Around the bend, you know, like
it'd be a giant blob of people that could run national records. in the space of 100 meters. So it'll be pretty amazing.
I hope Eugene cooperates weather-wise.
Yeah, that's always the question.
That would be crazy if there isn't a pacemaker. That would change that race so much.
Well, I think there is one, but I don't think he's asking for anything specific.
So they'll probably just do like, what, 345
probably
pace
do,
or something?
Like
casual.
Casual for Jakob's probably 345, 346 with a close. So 346 pace maybe with a close. But I mean, every
just
guy
not,
in that field can run with that for the first count. Every guy can do it. So it's unless you have a really bad day, they're all going to be there. They're all going to be firing. And George Beamish is going to be right behind everyone waiting for that last 100 meters. Aren't you, George?
What's that?
George, race plan revealed.
Race plan revealed from George Beamish. He's going to try and kick the last 50.
Hey, you have one race plan as well.
Yeah, I do. My race plan is to sit on Yard and then sit on, and Yard sits on Jakob and then Mario sits on me and then it's just a free-for-all. Last 100. Actually, it'd be amazing, Hobbs, if there was like 10 guys with 100 to go and everyone just stretches out every lane and we're just all sprinting at the end.
Oh.
See, that would be mad. I'm hoping the race turns out
wide.
Like that. Yeah, just 10 wide. Everyone's
photo
just there
finish.
And just, massive photo finish. That'd be actually sick.
That'd be good. Wow. Well, we're definitely...
That'd be the dopest finish line photo of all time.
Oh, yeah, man. That'd be sick.
See how wide we can go?
Yeah. George's in late in 10, but wins it.
Yeah. out of frame.
Yeah, out of frame.
That'd be so sick.
Yeah.
Definitely going to be talking
they're
about
gonna need a wide. They're going to need a wide finish tape.
Yeah. Like, man, you could probably run into the guy that holds the tag.
True. Well, as we begin our wrap-up, do we have any other questions that we would like to ask Hobbs?
What were you guys doing with slingshots today?
Oh, we've received a complaint from the neighbor. So Peter Bull stayed in this house maybe last summer, 2 summers ago. And he was really excited to be in America. And he to celebrate, he bought like a Red Ryder BB gun.
oh, Pete.
That's what I did when I first came.
We use it every day. We're firing off shots all day. That's kind of our pastime here. But the spring was getting a little worn out, so Bryce and I made a little trip to Walmart to restock on BB guns. And we threw a slingshot in there. I'm still working on my aim. We've only had it for a few days. But
what do you shoot? Like just like bottles or something?
Cans and stuff.
Yeah.
What was the complaint? Just a noise complaint?
No, they just it's gonna make me look bad, but no, the lady was worried he was gonna ricochet and hit her dog.
Don't do that.
Yeah. I promised I wouldn't hit it, so
so she was fine.
It's all right, trust me, bro. That was the trust me.
No,
bro.
I'm just joking. When I was like, if I see your dog, it's on sight.
Don't say that. Okay, now you're getting in trouble. Before I was like, oh, okay,
that's
now you're getting in trouble.
So good.
Oh, amazing.
But well, yeah, I don't know. Get back to me. I'll be lethal with the slingshot.
Can't wait to see some updates on that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, Hobbs, is there anything else you want to say to the Coffee Club fans out there while you have the platform?
There's too big of a platform for me.
True. Be careful what you say. I mean, you've already said a lot today, so don't feel like you have to say anything more.
No, I mean, I just appreciate you guys having me on. I've been listening to the pod since the start. So
no way.
It was
hell yeah.
Yeah. No I've, hopefully I can make a live appearance sometime. We'll go climbing.
Yeah, we'll get you on. Me and Morgan would love to go climb with you and just show how bad we are at climbing.
Oh, man.
We'll make that happen.
We'll make that happen.
Well, Hobbs, once again, thank you so much for coming on. It's been so good to have you. And everyone listening, thank you very much for listening. This has been episode 137 of the Coffee Club podcast, and we look forward to seeing you all again next week. Bye-bye.
See ya.